Tim Goldstein, autistic adult and your host for Life in a Neurotypical Universe, where we take a look at life from the perspective of an autistic adult. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Life in the Neurotypical Universe. Today, we have John Richmond. John has three children, one who is autistic, lives on a farm with his wife and his kids, and he currently is a PhD candidate in business administration.
You know, sensory processing was probably where, outside of the speech, you know, delayed speech issue, sensory processing was where we really started to know, hey, you know, something's up here. That we need to take a look at, because he's just very, his senses are just always on overdrive, to be honest with you. And a matter of fact, my first book, Totally Lost, I wrote a whole chapter about, you know, sensory processing and how to deal with some of those, issues that we found. I'm sad to say that some of it's just trial and error. You just got to find out what works for you and go with it. There's things you can do. Neoprene weighted vests and weighted blankets are very popular with these kiddos. They like the feeling of being hugged. They like compression. So those are very popular. We've also had really good luck with, you know, his hearing's very sensitive. So we got a pair of those, sound insulated, like gun earmuffs. Mm-hmm. We keep a pair of those with us at all times. If we go somewhere that's loud, he gets those. And so those are a big, and you know, if you're looking for a good Christmas present, a pair of insulated headphones or like a Bose, you know, sound canceling headphones wouldn't be the worst Christmas present ever for a kiddo on the spectrum.
You know, for an adult on the spectrum, I'll say I love my Boses. I think I've had a pair of them for 10 years now at least, and they're lifesavers.
Yeah, it's a big issue with those on the spectrum, because it's just, you know, my son, we just say that his senses are just always on hyperdrive.
I'm going to mention one thing that a lot of parents don't necessarily recognize is when it comes to sensory issues, it's not always that the sense is cranked up too high. There's certainly lots of times where the issue, I mean, in your son, it's the senses are just, you know, the volume turned up way too high. But it can also be the volume's turned way down. I mean, you hear very frequently about autistic children who, you know, they'll find them out wandering in the middle of the winter in a snowbank, and they got a pair of shorts on, and they're just totally comfortable as can be. They just don't sense much of the pain in the cold. So
my son doesn't seem to have a problem with temperature. He, you know, he'll go outside and be swinging when it's, you know, 20 degrees outside, and we're like, hey, why don't you come back in and put some shoes on, because you're gonna get pneumonia. That's absolutely true.
So he may have some areas where it's turned down a little bit, and certainly the hearing portion is, you know, that's one of the worst areas to have turned up, but one of the most common areas to have turned up, because unfortunately noise is everywhere we go.
I think it's not only the fact that his hearing may be turned up. So my hearing is very sensitive, but I think it's more the ability to cope with it that he has issues with me. My hearing is very turned up. If, I know I need to remove myself, or I need to back up a little bit because it's too loud up here, whatever the case may be, he just, at this point in his life, he just knows it bothers me. And it begins to affect his mannerisms. He starts kind of melting down a little bit, whereas me, I know I need to back up a little bit, or I need to get out of this room, it's too loud, or something like that. I think it's not only the fact that it is on hyperdrive or may not, but the ability to realize and cope with it are areas in which he struggles at his age right now. I'm assuming as he gets older that's
right. At his age, I mean, it's kind of hard if he's in a, you know, a classroom, something like that, where it's just too loud. You know, they're playing games, the kids are all screaming, they're all having a good time. Yeah, at this point, I mean, what do you do when you're at that age? It's not like you can get up and walk out of the classroom and not get in trouble for it.
To brownies, when he would come up and ask for brown cake, and you're kind of like, what? Yes, this is just nothing but brown chewy cake. That's all this is. So yeah, food is one of the areas that, you can kind of have some fun with autism, really, if you want to know the truth, because he's going to do something tonight during dinner when we eat dinner here in a little while. That's going to be funny. He's going to dip a banana in ketchup or do something along those lines. It's one of those areas that you can have a little fun with this condition.
Yeah, food is certainly can be a challenge, we'll say, at times. Does he have any particular issues with sensory processing?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I mean, because that's an area that runs into food, is a lot of times it's not the taste of the food that you end up finding they don't like. It's the texture. They don't like the way it feels in their mouth.
I will tell you, taking him to get a haircut is a literal trip to hell. It's awful. It's literally awful. He cannot, his scalp isn't, I mean, the scalp in general is a very sensitive area. And for him, it's like a minefield. He doesn't really like you to he doesn't really like you to wash his hair. Obviously we do, but he doesn't really like it. He doesn't like the feeling of it. He doesn't like his head being underwater. And man, taking him, it was so bad. We just quit. I just said, he just have to have long hair. There's nothing we can do about it. Because we would take him to a Great Clips or a barbershop somewhere. And we, barbers and hairstylists are generally jovial people. We'd take him in, and by the end of it, they're going to need therapy themselves because he was screaming and I was bear hugging him, keeping him, immobilized while they buzzed his hair off. I mean, it was awful. It was absolutely horrible. They'd be end up crying, take him out, bring him back in. He was fine after 5 minutes, but we had a lady one day that had to leave and go home. So we literally cost this one. Usually whenever we took him for a haircut, it usually cost around $50 or $60. We were going to not because we were going to some high price salon, but it was 50, it was $10, $15, $20 for the haircut and $50 for the distress premium.
Yeah, exactly.
That we had caused for the tip. So yeah, that is really an awful thing. I will tell you, there is hope on that range. If any of your listeners have this same issue, go Google calming clippers. Some genius put a clipper guard on a pair of scissors, and it's the best $35 I've ever spent, because the problem he was having, he didn't like that buzzing on his scalp. He did not like that. He doesn't love getting his hair cut anyway, but oh my God, it is miles better than where we were at, light years ahead of where we were at. Because my wife, we take him out on the patio, we kind of buzz his hair off with it. It's like a burr haircut. You can get different size clipper guards and everything to put on it. It's the best $35 I've ever spent. And by the way, a really great customer service, company here. If there's something, it's got a lifetime warranty. If there's something wrong with it, you send it back and they'll send you a brand new pair. By the way, disclaimer, not being paid a dime for this, just a very satisfied customer. So if any of your listeners are having this same issue with haircuts, I highly recommend these. But yeah, and like you say, the textures, my son loves flannel shirts because of the texture. He doesn't, and waffle weave shirts are very popular with him. There's certain types of Halloween costumes. Until very recent, last couple of years, he didn't really do Halloween costumes because he didn't like the texture of most of those costumes.
Yeah, they tend to be a little stiffer and crinkly and kind of.
Yeah, they're made out of cheap material most of the time.
Yeah, they haven't been washed a couple times to soften them up at all. I can understand why he wouldn't like them.
Sensory processing was probably where, outside of the speech, delayed speech issue, sensory processing was where we really started to notice, hey, something's up here that we need to take a look at, because he's just very, his senses are just always on overdrive. To be honest with you. And a matter of fact, my first book, Totally Lost, I wrote a whole chapter about, sensory processing and how to deal with some of those issues that we found. I'm sad to say that some of it's just trial and error. You just got to find out what works for you and go with it. There's things you can do. Neoprene weighted vests and weighted blankets are very popular with these kiddos. They like the feeling of being hugged. They like compression. So those are very popular. We've also had really good luck with, his hearing's very sensitive. So we got a pair of those, sound insulated, like gun earmuffs. Mm-hmm. We keep a pair of those with us at all times. If we go somewhere that's loud, he gets those. So those are a big, and you know, if you're looking for a good Christmas present, a pair of, insulated headphones or like a Bose, sound canceling headphones wouldn't be the worst Christmas present ever, for a kiddo on the spectrum.
You know, for an adult on the spectrum, I'll say I love my Boses. I think I've had a pair of them for 10 years now, at least, and they're lifesavers.
Yeah, it's a big issue with those on the spectrum, because it's just, my son, we just say that his senses are just always on hyperdrive.
I'm going to mention one thing that a lot of parents don't necessarily recognize is when it comes to sensory issues, it's not always that the sense is cranked up too high. There's certainly lots of times where the issue, in your son, it's the senses are just, the volume turned up way too high. But it can also be the volume's turned way down. You hear very frequently about autistic children who, they'll find them out wandering in the middle of the winter in a snowbank, and they got a pair of shorts on, and they're just totally comfortable as can be. They just don't sense much of the pain and the cold. So my son
doesn't seem to have a problem with temperature. He, he'll go outside and be swinging when it's 20 degrees outside, and we're like, hey, why don't you come back in and put some shoes on, because you're gonna get pneumonia. That's absolutely true.
So he may have some areas where it's turned down a little bit, and certainly the hearing portion is, that's one of the worst areas to have turned up, but one of the most common areas to have turned up, because unfortunately noise is everywhere we go.
I think it's not only the fact that his hearing may be turned up. So my hearing is very sensitive, but I think it's more the ability to cope with it that he has issues with me. My hearing is very turned up. If, I know I need to remove myself, or I need to back up a little bit because it's too loud up here, whatever the case may be, he just, at this point in his life, he just knows it bothers me, and it begins to affect his mannerisms. He starts kind of melting down a little bit. Whereas me, I know I need to back up a little bit, or I need to get out of this room, it's too loud, or something like that. I think it's not only the fact that it is on hyperdrive or may not, but the ability to realize and cope with it are areas in which he struggles at his age right now. I'm assuming as he gets older that's
right. At his age, it's kind of hard if he's in a classroom, something like that, where it's just too loud. They're playing games, the kids are all screaming, they're all having a good time. Yeah, at this point, what do you do when you're at that age? It's not like you can get up and walk out of the classroom and not get in trouble for it. He doesn't have those choices. You're right. At this point, it's kind of just, he's got to deal with it and suffer through it, because we don't give that flexibility to the autistic children of saying, hey, okay, we recognize this is noisy. What can we do with
I think
the other kids that, why, how can we handle this so we can make everybody fit in?
Yeah. And I don't pretend to be an expert in the field. I'm only an expert in my child. I think probably where this condition hits him the hardest is in coping ability. I do think he has less of an ability to cope with things that don't go his way, or that aren't within his little, perception of reality, that's where he maybe is at a disadvantage at this point in his life, and quite frankly, where his mother and I have a responsibility to help him with. I think that's our biggest, the area that I can really help him as a father is helping him cope with that and say, I know that they didn't have your movie, that maybe your movie's not on the TV at the time that you want it to be. And that's okay. We'll get through it. I think that's where that falls on his mother and I to really help him with those coping skills. So I think that is an area where he probably is at a disadvantage over his neurotypical peers at this point in his life.
I'll put it this way. Again, I'm, more towards the retirement end than the going to school end. And I still have very big challenges with coping skills. It's not at all uncommon for me. And I, in my workplace, divulge completely that I'm autistic. because doing the work I do as an advocate, all they have to do is punch my name into the internet and they'll find out I'm autistic. So I'd rather control the messaging than have somebody find out.
Right.
But oftentimes, I mean, for instance, my boss sent out an email about, I think it was getting time cards in on a certain time or I don't know, something. And it was time cards. And she had sent it out saying, I want them put a reminder in your calendar, not just to me, it was the entire team. Put your reminder in your calendar for 3 p.m. on Friday to turn in your time cards. Well, I had to ask her, does that mean that I'm supposed to stop working at 3 p.m. and just like turn in my time card and be done for the day? And then she goes, no, they're really not due until Monday. Well, then I have to ask the question again. Okay, then what's the date at which I get in trouble? Is it 3 p.m. on Friday or is it like 10 a.m. on Monday? Because you didn't give me an answer. You gave me a range. And I'm looking for an answer. What keeps me on the happy side of the list? I don't care what it is. I just need a number so I can shoot for it.
Yeah, I think coping skills are just something that everybody has to grow into their own way. But I do think that's where my son definitely, you know, needs some help in his life is with coping skills. And I think that's, you know, that's up to his mother and I to make sure that we, you know, that we are helping him get what he needs as far as coping skills, because that's, you know, that's really what living life is all about. Not everything's going to go your way. Not everything's going to be this, you know, my son has a very segregated perception of reality. Everything happens at a predetermined time, manner, place, and sequence. And,
it doesn't,
it's not life. And I wrote a, right.
What? Come on, John, you're breaking my reality on me.
I wrote a whole chapter in Totally Lost about the title of it is Find Yours. And the whole thing is about find your coping mechanism. You know, I say in there about me, you know, after I found out about, you know, after we got the diagnosis, I cried, I grieved, I drank a little, I went and got counseling, you know, and all those are okay in moderation, some of them, but find your coping mechanism, find what works for you. And that's difficult for my son. He tends to spin out of control and melt down. That's usually when we have the worst issues, is when something doesn't fit within what he considers to be his little segregated perception of reality, and then he can't cope with it, so he tends to spin out and kind of melt down. And that's where his mother and I really have to try to bring him back in, you know, to tell him this is going to be okay, we'll deal with it. At this point in his life, it's very difficult for him, and that's probably the area where we have the farthest to go is in coping skills.
So when you're talking about having a meltdown, I'm convinced that there's really two completely different styles of meltdowns. Now, the end result when you see the meltdown looks identical. The difference is what caused it? You know, to me, I tend to have the instant meltdowns. You know, I'm at the airport and they cancel the flight and it's 11 o'clock at night already and I'm supposed to be somewhere in the morning and you can't find a flight and I just freak out. I lose it. But it's easy to understand because you saw what happened. A flight got canceled. You know, I had responsibilities. You know, I couldn't handle it. The ones that to me cause the biggest issues in particularly the workplace, and, you know, I'm sure for kids it would be in school and, you know, whatever, outside of the family, is what I refer to as the straw that breaks the camel back meltdowns. It's that stress just throughout the day, the little piece here, the little piece there, the way that this didn't go right, that this thing didn't go right, the, you know, just an accumulation. And the best picture I've ever seen of it was a galvanized bucket, kind of the old-fashioned 5-gallon, you know, galvanized milk bowl bucket, and with some holes in the bottom. And if you take an autistic person, they have very few holes. So as you dump stress in, they tend to not be able to drain it as fast as you're able to pour it in. So what happens eventually? You drop in something that seems like nothing and then it goes over the rim. And that is the slow burn meltdowns. And to me, those are the ones that cause the biggest trouble because everybody looks at this thing that they think precipitated it, which was relatively trivial, and don't recognize that trivial piece was stacked upon a whole day's worth of frustration. How do you see with your kiddo? Does he have both? Is it one versus the other more?
So you're exactly right. There's definitely the two types, the catastrophic right here, right now, meltdowns versus the, like you say, the drip, drip, drip. I will tell you the catastrophic ones we've found easier to deal with because you know what caused it.
Bingo. Right. You cause and effect. So you at least not sitting there going, what the heck was it? You can see what it was.
I'll never forget. So we've got a nanny for our kids and she calls me one day. She's like, listen, he is spinning out of control. I need you to come here. So I leave work and I run over. Well, so he goes to tumbling classes and they're actually held in our local mall here. They've got a little area over there where they do it. And he goes through the same door every day. It's one of the handicapped accessible doors, the ADA doors that you punch the button and it'll open on its own. Mm-hmm. He likes to go and punch that button, see it open on its own. Well, this one day, for whatever reason, they had that door locked. And he spun literally out of control. He just couldn't handle it. He wanted to go in there, had to go in that door, and it wasn't available. So what did I do? I went and found, I ran over there, and I go find a security officer. I said, you've got to open that door, man. I said, help me out here. And he said, yeah, that's no problem. We just had some work done earlier today and I hadn't unlocked it. I said, can you please go unlock that door so we can go walk through it? I said, and I'll explain here in a minute what's going on. And sure enough, he went and opened that door and it kind of, you know, it's set the universe back in alignment. Whereas, you know, lately we've been trying to figure out there's something going on with him. He's, quite frankly, he's gotten a little violent toward his sister. And you know, he tends to lash out and we just have not put our thumb on what it is. You know, we go down this path of we think it might be this. So we'll go take a look, you know, maybe it's, you know, one of his things in his room is out of play. No, that's not it. Or maybe he's got a tooth loose and it's hurting him, or maybe he's running a fever. So, you know, you just have to start kind of doing, kind of trial and error, checking things off. No, it's not that. No, it's not that, until you get down to it. A couple of months ago, he was in a bad mood for a couple of weeks, really having a hard go of it. And we just couldn't figure out what was going on. And finally, one night for dinner, my wife put his plate in front of him and he had some sliced up apples and he bit into one of those apples and out comes a baby tooth. And it was like flipping a switch. It was like flipping a switch. That tooth had been bothering him.
Yeah, the pain of the tooth. And you never knew, never saw. I mean, it was his first baby tooth. So.
he couldn't tell us. So now if he gets in a bad mood, and actually the other day he lost another tooth. So he may be having trouble with these baby teeth coming out, but it's just a trial and error at that point. Whereas the situation at the mall, we knew exactly what was the problem. We knew what the problem was. And we knew how to fit. We knew how to fix it. Because the thing about it is, and if you've got a kiddo on the spectrum that deals with these meltdowns like this, you've got to fix the problem before you can begin to address coping with a future problem. You've got to get them calmed down. You've got to get them back to planet Earth before you can begin to go, okay, now next time this happens, let's try it a little bit differently than just spinning off and hitting your sister or crying and screaming or whatever, you know, however they react, something like this. You've got to fix the problem before you can begin to cope with it the next time.
You know, I like to say, and again, you know, I do deal more in the adult range where you can have conversations and such. And one of the things that for me is most frustrating is when I'm talking to somebody neurotypical, maybe in HR, maybe not in HR, likely to be in HR. You tell them whatever it is the way that you see it. And then they want to argue with your perception and tell you your perception is in reality is wrong. Which to me is ludicrous. I mean, his perception in reality is his perception in reality. If he didn't go through that door, something wasn't right. You can't say his perception is wrong. That's how he perceives the world. But we seem to have this challenge with having people, other people perceive and process and work in the world differently, you know, than the quote neurotypical norm.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult but it's also human nature to kind of, you know, assume that other people see things the way I do. And if you do that with your autistic child, you are making a grave mistake. You have got to learn to see things through their eyes. And the quicker you can get around to saying, wait a minute, that's not how he thinks, or, you know, he sees this a little different, or he doesn't like this texture, the quicker you can get there, the better off you're going to be. Because if you're trying to put the worst mistake you can make is to try to put a neurotypical mindset to an autistic child. That is recipe for disaster.
It does not compute. I mean, we're bucking against it, because it just in our brain makes absolutely no sense. And then even worse, we're being told that's what we have to do, even though our brain is telling us stupid, stupid, stupid.
It's oil and water. It's just not going to work. If you're trying to apply a neurotypical mindset to somebody with autism and vice versa, by the way, it's a recipe for disaster, honestly.
You know, I like that, because that's actually kind of the approach that I take with it, is saying that for all intents and purposes, if you have autism, you're an alien compared to the rest of the world. And the reason I like to say that is, as you say, most people tend to start with, they must be like me, because it's the only life experience you know. So what else you can base it on? You know, it's the only thing you know. But when you do that with an autistic person, as you said, you're going to get it 100% wrong. I was talking with a friend, Chris Turner, down in Australia, who does a lot of work in autism and work type arenas. And we were talking about this. And I like to say that, you know, most people start with the thought of like me, but, and then they start, as we talk, we start figuring out where our differences are between us. But we figure that overall, you're like me. As you said, with an autistic person, you can't do that. And Chris put it in just a wonderful way. The way he put it is, not at all like me, but. So in other words, recognize right up front, we're totally different from each other. But now let's go try and find those commonalities so that we can communicate and work together.
Yeah, and one of the things about, I don't pretend to be a psychologist or anything, but we humans, every human on the planet is guilty of assuming that normal is me. because that's all I know is me. And so we assume that I am normal. I am the way everything should be. And it's not arrogance or anything. It's not anything like narcissism. It's just, I am what I know. So therefore I need to make my son more like me. And when I got out of that frame of mind into more of, no, I need to help my son be able to cope with the life issues that he's going to struggle with. I don't need to change him. I don't need to make him me. I don't need to, it's not anything along those lines. It's, I need to help him cope with things that he right now is not capable of coping with. That's the difference between him and I.
I like to put it as, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to teach him tools so that he can interact with the world. You're not trying to change who he is. You're not trying to make him a different person. You're just trying to say, hey, you know, if you're going to go to Japan for a while, you're probably going to need this tool called Japanese. And I think that's a much healthier approach than the all too common approach of, oh, no, that's not how you do it. This is the right way. That's wrong. This is right. That's wrong. This is right. And instead of simply saying, hey, great kid, but, you know, we do need to teach a little tool around this area. And that's my thought. Yeah,
that's exactly right. It's just teaching tools about how to live life that you and I are, you know, that some of us are come by naturally and others struggle with a little bit more. That's really what it's all about, is just trying to teach my son. Life is going to throw you a curveball here and there. I'm a perfect example. And you've got to be able to sit back, you know, to sit back on it and hit it out of the park, whatever it comes at you, because it's going to happen. Not everything is perfectly linear, and you just got to be able to cope with life. And like you say, it's giving him the tools to be able to do that. And we're at a much better place than we were 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago when we got diagnosed, but it's a daily struggle, and it's going to be a daily struggle for his entire life. And bring it on, I say.
You know, I say every morning I get up, it's a darn daily struggle. That unfortunately tends to be life. And, you know, it kind of, as we started, for him, that's his normal life. It's not a worse struggle any day, just like your struggles, you know, every day's about the same. You know, there's some bad ones, there's some good ones, but they average out. So I think that's one of the things I always remember with the kids is that is their normal. Like you say, you got to help them understand and get the tools to be able to cope and get by in society. But that is their normal.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
But very different and very difficult often to try and get. And doesn't matter, I guess, you know, whether that's an adult that has an autistic child or just an adult period, pick one off the street, to recognize somebody's thinking in a totally different pattern than they think. It's always an interesting thing. They just don't, you know, as you say, they can't see how, like your son doing the puzzle. They just don't see the methodology. You've watched it long enough to figure out the methodology. They're just going, wow, I wouldn't do it like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, we humans are really good at assuming that, you know, we're the normal one. And boy, if you need to be brought down to earth and shown just how abnormal you are, have an autistic child. they will open your eyes to things. That, my son has taught me more in his 7.5 years than any adult ever has or ever will. Maybe second only to my parents.
I say in the adult world that when you have an autistic employee in a company, that is your canary in the coal mine. If there's something going on, whether there's something going on at school, your kid's going to be showing it long before the rest of the kids. The autistic employee is going to be showing it the stress, the anxiety, the whatever, long before anybody else. So it's the canary in the coal mine, you know. You've almost got somebody that can help you understand when things are going bad before anybody else will know.
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
You know, we've had great time talking. I really enjoyed this, and you've brought so many great points to it. And the Clippers, you've got me just excited about these Clippers. You're going to have to send me the URL for them. And again, I'm not related to them in any way, shape, or form either. I get no money out of them, but they're just super interesting. And if you'll send me the URL, I'll take and include that in the show notes, because I know that is definitely a big challenge area with a lot of people who have autistic kids is haircuts they're a traditional issue. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. I will definitely send them to you. They have been an absolute lifesaver.
So John, if somebody wanted to reach out to you, contact you, buy some of your books, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
Best way is my website, johndrichmond.com. Or you can, my email address, everything's on there. You can sign up for a newsletter. You can purchase both of my books, on there. They both come directly from me autographed. I also ought to throw in that I just submitted a sequel to Savant for publication. So I'm hoping to have that going here in the next, few months. But you can go on my website, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Facebook. My email address is johndrichmondauthor@gmail.com. I love to hear from people. I love to hear critiques of my book, positive and negative. My website is, and there's also a blog on my website. You can kind of keep up and going with me. I wrote one not too long ago about, how Halloween is different for, kids on the spectrum. The holidays are just generally different for kids. And, so I recommend going and reading about our experiences about the holidays, because it's a different time for autistic kids as opposed to a neurotypical.
Perfect. I'll take in again, I'll list all those down in the show notes so people don't have to sit here. And, you know, I hate when I get to the end of a podcast and I'm trying to get their website and I go backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards about 18 times and get frustrated because I'm trying to drive at the same time.
Wonderful. You can also get my books from major retailers, Barnes & Noble and Amazon both carry it. And they both carry it in the ebook as well.
Yeah, but they should go to you and buy it from you. You're the author. They'll get signed versions. At the other place, they just get like off the shelf. Anybody can have it.
That is true. I have not yet learned how to do an ebook. I need to figure that out.
It's easy. We'll talk about that later. You know, I would love to, check back in with you, you know, maybe 6-8 months down the road, get a few more things out there and a little more mileage on your son as he's kind of going through a transition phase now into young adolescent. Things are going to keep changing, and would love to hear more about it.
I would love that. And I've really enjoyed talking with you. This is a great thing you do. I really can't thank you enough. And yeah, I look forward to catching back up and seeing what turning eight has in store for my son.
Wonderful. We'll definitely do that. I appreciate it so much, John. You've been great talking with you.
Thank you.
Na, na, na.
We hope that you've enjoyed another episode of Life in a Neurotypical Universe. Please, if you enjoyed this, share it with your friends. Go take their phone and subscribe them. Heck, it will help us all out. If you want to know more about neurodiversity or have any questions for me, you can reach me at my website, timgoldstein.com, where I'll be more than glad to help you as best I can to navigate through the neurotypical universe.